because if attached to the material world, it won't do that.
So by the intelligence, then you break the mind's attachment to the material world and establish it in attachment to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? You move from one to the other. So the mind, therefore the mind is higher. Because it can break the attachment. Does that make sense? The mind is generated from goodness, so technically one would think it's in a higher position. But the difficulty is that the mode of goodness is steady. So its attraction and repulsion is there, but that attraction and repulsion in the material world comes from the mode of passion, fulfilling one's desires. So therefore, the intelligence which has come from passion then will be the proper tool to work on breaking the mind's passion, attachment to passion. Does this make sense? Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Here the word tata means from the two previously described illusions. That means Ananda Brahma and Vaikuntha Brahma. Mukti means the individual soul's attained freedom. And Viveka means by understanding the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit soul. Right? Because the verse is Vivekena Tato Mukti Vimuktihi. So it's making it clear is that the knowledge or intelligence is the meaning is knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Other knowledge will not break your attachment to the material world. In the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.12 it is said, if a person knows the true nature of the soul, and if he thinks I am spirit, then what will he desire in this material world? How will he become attached to this material body? Right? So here we're talking about the true nature. If you know what the soul is, if we're the soul, what is here in the material world for the soul? So there's nothing to become attached to. So that will free you from material entanglement. Right? So in doing that, you're using the intelligence to understand this, but what it's doing is affecting the ego, the identity. So then the mode of ignorance is corrected and brought to the proper position of understanding of our connection to the Supreme Lord. Right? That identity is then what you're going to function with. Right? Then we can get the mind to, it means what it's going to accept and reject. So it's not going to accept anything from the material world. But because we are connecting with the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it's going to become attached to that. Right? Does that make sense? If your sambandha and prayojana are in place, the abhideya is naturally going to function in that. Does that make sense? Because abhideya follows means thinking, feeling, willing. Thinking is sambandha. Feeling is prayojana. And willing is abhideya. So the abhideya is always following your prayojana. Right? If you don't have a goal, you don't act. If you have a goal, you act. Therefore, if the sambandha and the prayojana are correct, then the abhideya will be correct. If the sambandha and the prayojana are wrong, the abhideya will be wrong. Right? Means if sambandha and prayojana are spiritual, your activities will be spiritual. If the sambandha and the prayojana are material, then your activities will be material. Right? Does it make sense? Right? So here is that if you know the true nature of the soul, then it corrects the sambandha. The sambandha becomes established properly. Okay? So that having been done, then there's nothing to get attached to. So therefore, your activities are going to be spiritual. They can't be material. Does this make sense? Yeah. In the Mundaka Upanishad 2-9, it is said, thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. Right? So in other words, you see the self, and that's the actual position of the living entity, not this material conditioning that we think that we are. Right? The wise transcendentalists are described in these words of Bhagavad Gita 4:33 and 39. Quote, O chastiser of the enemy, The sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of material possessions. O Sanapita, after all, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. Right? In other words, you perform sacrifice, it will bring you, one, you'll get fruit of results, but if it's done with detachment, it will bring you to the platform of knowledge. Right? So through properly applied karma, you will get to the stage of jnana. Right? But on the stage of jnana, it doesn't have a method to get itself to there. Does that make sense? So it naturally happens. So therefore we can see is knowledge is the natural progression. You perform and it gets the result. So then that makes it, puts it in a superior position. Does that make sense? The intelligence then becomes, how do you say, more important. So if one can make a sacrifice in knowledge, then that's better than the sacrifice in material possessions. So if one's intelligence and one's knowledge is then connected to the Lord, that's better than just the material facilities, right? But the perfection of it, because it's devotional service, because it's actually transcendental, then even if one is only sacrificing the possessions, that will bring you to the platform of knowledge. You understand? So it will bring you to the higher position. That's not because then one might say, the doubt might come up, but then that would put karma in the superior position, because by karma you can get jnana. Right? So then that means jnana is dependent upon that. No, because that is only functioning in that way if there is detachment, which is based on knowledge. Right? So in other words, karma performed for yourself, that's activity, but without knowledge. Then karma performed with knowledge, then that is naishkarmya. So that then, its result is getting greater knowledge and a detachment from the material. If you perform the activity with the desire, with the, you know, how you say, the self-centered desire, the material desire, then it will get you material results and it will take you deeper into material energy. Right? But now if you perform this same activity with knowledge, which means that you have to be detached from the item, right? But it's performed as sacrifice, then it will give you knowledge, it'll deepen your knowledge and understanding, and it will take you away from attachment to the material world. It'll take you out of the material world. You see how this is working? So therefore the key is intelligence. Right? But this intelligence means the truth about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit soul. Anything else will not actually give you liberation. Right? If you don't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you don't understand the individual soul and their relationship, you won't get out of the material world. You know what I'm saying? You can get to the border, but you can't actually get out. You know, you can get to the Brahman, but you're not actually out. Right? Because means out means you're into the spiritual world. Does that make sense? That's the... Then second verse, verse 39. A faithful man who is absorbed in transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. Right? So one who's absorbed in knowledge and the senses are in control, that means... It doesn't mean they're not engaged, right? The language is written in this way so that those who are interested in the impersonal understanding can also find their inspiration. Does that make sense? Because the Vedas, as the authority, then must be the authority for everybody, even for those who aren't actually understanding the real purpose of the Veda. It still has to be their authority. Because if it's not, then how do you have a... How is it Shankara and Madhva can argue? Because they commonly accept the Veda. If they don't, then you just have to rely on logic. Like when you're dealing with the Buddhists, then you only can deal with logic. Because they don't accept a common basis of authority. Right? Does that make sense? So here is that, therefore, the subdue the senses means the senses are engaged in appropriate activity according to this transcendental knowledge. Right? Because action means it's with knowledge. So intelligence, actually, you see it situated in two places. It's situated in sambandha, meaning the interest or desire. What is to have the basic fundamental knowledge of the parts and parcels of the field of activity, to be able to discriminate between those and have an inspiration to be involved in a particular application of the field of activities to get a particular result. And it's also used in the application of the activity so that it actually gets you the result you want. Right? But the result is not, it's not an application of intelligence. That's an application of experience. That's the mind. Does that make sense? So that's why on that, sometimes if one is taken care of, one gets experience, one doesn't look at things necessarily through the logic of the intelligence, because it's not necessary. Right? A small child does not have to be specifically intelligent. It just experiences. The parents are being intelligent. They're using their intelligence to apply the activity to get the result, and the kid experiences it. Does that make sense? So that's why then suddenny you wake up, you have to be real. All this saying is that the discrimination of the intelligence has to be applied into this whole equation of experience. Right? So the mind and the intelligence are then working together. So when the does that make sense? Right? In Bhagavad Gita 16:16 and 16:21, the Lord also declares, "Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, one becomes too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and falls down into hell. There are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul." Okay, so this, so being bound up in so many things, because one thing leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next, so that attachment, when that increases too much, one falls down into hell. Why does that happen? Because then the desire for what you want in the material world, the lust for it, that drive for it, and the greed to have more than you actually need to have, or more than you deserve. Right? So these are going to be the cause. From there, there's going to be deviation. So if one wonders why one gets deviated, it's because of these three. Right? Because otherwise, if you're dealing with the material world according to your prescribed duty, in the mode of sacrifice and charity, then where does lust, anger, and greed come in? Right? It doesn't. So therefore, one's elevated. But when one's dealing materially, then one feels this is oneself, this is my right to have. Therefore, then you want more. If you don't get it, you know, you have the desire for it because it's yours, so that's the lust. You don't get it, you get angry. Or you're getting, you want more than what you deserve, then that's greed. So then that will always create mistakes. That means one will perform an activity that is inappropriate. That will take you to hell. Does that make sense? In Bhagavad Gita 7:16, the Lord also declares, "O best among the Bharatas, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute." So here we see is that now we're connecting surrender. So that means using the intelligence to understand that I, as an individual soul, am the servant of God, right? That was what was started off in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The one who knows the true nature of the soul, he thinks I am spirit soul. So that, when it comes to maturity, one's not engaged in the material world. But in the beginning stage, you know you are that. So then, knowing you are that, then you start to turn your material desires still in connection with the Lord. So therefore, the distressed, you want that distress to go away, but at the arrangement of the Lord. You want wealth, but at the arrangement of the Lord. Knowledge, or what is that says? Because, yeah, searching knowledge of the Absolute. But it's all in connection with the Lord. You understand? But it's a beginning stage. At some point, it's got to go beyond that, that they're not doing it for the purpose of their own purpose. But then the Naishkarmi aspect comes, they move beyond that. Right? And then from that, then they move into the thing, they're not doing it for themselves, they're doing it for the Lord. That then becomes standard. Then you say, this is proper devotional service. Right? But it still starts with that same principle that is given the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.25, Queen Kunti tells Lord Krishna, I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and death. Right? So she's making the point is that when she was in the forest, then all those difficulties that were happening, then they were always turning to the Lord. And because of that, then they're not going to be in the material world anymore. Well, now that the war is over, and you know they've gotten their place back, there is no Duryodhana and his brothers, everything's very nice in that, now they can easily forget the Lord, because everything's nice and pleasant. But as long as there was trouble, they're thinking of the Lord, so that's actually going to free them from the material world. That actually gives the best result. Right? Does that make sense? So it comes back again, connection to the Supreme Lord, that knowledge about and therefore connection to the Supreme Lord. Right? You know about the Lord means, and you know you're serving the Lord means you're going to have to establish yourself as servant of the Lord, which means your activities are going to have to be connected to the Lord. So when that's done, that frees you. It's just, this is just another way of saying it. Right? This is being said within the life, you know, that's pleasant, and it has that element of rasa to it. Right? This is not an Upanishadic presentation, this is a Puranic presentation. Right? So the flavor seems different, but it's making the same point. Otherwise, why are they all in the same purport? Right? Because they're saying the same point. So this is vichar, is where you look at the same thing from many different angles. Then you start to get a broader understanding of it. In the Narada Pancharatra, second night, second chapter, it is said, by associating with the devotees of Sri Krishna, one attains unwavering, unmotivated, blissful devotional service. Service that eventually allows one to serve Lord Krishna directly. As a tender sprout, new sprout, on vines or trees grows with the rains and withers with the scorching sunshine. So a new sprout on the tree of devotional service grows by conversing with devotees and withers by conversing with non-devotees. So now he's taking it as that, how are we going to situate, if you're actually situated in this knowledge, then, and you're seeing yourself as a servant of the Lord as supreme, then that's going to put yourself in the position of devotee. And that means you associating with devotees, it will cultivate that. Right? Because in the association of devotees, we cultivate this whole aspect of the nature of the Supreme Lord, the nature of the soul. That cultivates it, that makes it grow. But the non-devotees, they're going to speak all kinds of nonsense that have nothing to do with the Supreme Lord. That will wither the creeper. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that how do you tell the difference? Is our knowledge and appreciation, understanding of the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him increasing or not? If it's only getting a good material result, but not increasing that, there must be something wrong. Does that make sense? So, if it does that, then we know it's correct. If not, then we know that we're just, by our conditioned nature, engaged in material activities. And then, at times, we're engaged in devotional activities. Does that make sense? So, the idea is, by the association of devotees, then we bring everything always to... the platform of proper devotional service. Otherwise, then what happens is we can get distracted because we're so used to looking at things from the material perspective, and looking at things from a spiritual perspective is actually new, though it is natural, right? Because the soul is looking for eternality. So that's a natural consideration or natural activity of the soul. Right? The soul wants eternality and happiness. Therefore, but The problem is it's an illusion because it thinks it can gain it here. So, because it's come under the purview of the material energy, the living entity then doesn't have the proper perspective by which to view the spiritual. That can only come by being in touch with the spiritual. Right? By being in touch with material, you see materially. By being in touch with the spiritual, you see spiritually. So therefore, if you're in touch with devotees, you'll see spiritually. And if not, you'll see materially. So even one's perspective on spiritual life, one will add into it the material perspective. So that's why the association of devotees becomes very, very important. Right? Otherwise, then, we get distracted, perspective gets wrong. We look at the material world as so big, and the Supreme Lord is so far away. So the material world is insurmountable for someone absorbed in material nature. But for someone absorbed in Krishna, then it's reduced down to the size of a calf's footprint. So if you have Krishna, the material world is the size of a calf's footprint. What's so special about that? Right? Nothing. The spiritual is the big thing, that's little. So then your topic's all about Krishna. The material world is then reduced. But if one's not seeing in that perspective, then the material world becomes very, very big. And then Krishna is very, very far away. Does that make sense? So then it makes it actually look harder than it is. And if one's looking at it from the material point of view, it is hard. It's impossible. But if you look at it from the spiritual point of view, gained by the association of devotees, then it's very easy. Does that make sense? So here's where we should be applying the all-or-nothing principle. That you have Krishna, then there's no material world. It's very easy. You know, you don't have Krishna, then it's the material world is very difficult. So it's kind of like have one or the other. Bhagavad Gita 4:34. The Supreme Personality of Bhakti says, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Right? So now we're looking at, okay, so now with intelligence, then we start to discriminate. We take up the understanding of the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the soul. From that, we stop identifying with material energy, so we stop having material desire. Right? Then that is then brought into, therefore then we surrender to the Lord. And then in surrendering to the Lord, we take up the association of devotees. In taking up the association of devotees, then we surrender to the spiritual master. Surrendering to the spiritual master, then that will bring us to the point where we actually understand the absolute truth. Right? So we see it's not any different than what is our, what we just call the devotional process. But he's taking it through the process of Upanishadic analyzation. You understand what step by step's actually happening. Then Bhagavad Gita 7:3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and out of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Because perfection means liberation. That's what the word means. When the word perfection is used, it's always referring to liberation. So that's why when you say, you know, a perfect human being, it means someone who's attained to perfect. Just let him crawl up. Yes, we do. How do you let him crawl up on the hand? They must have. I don't know. You don't want to. You just let him crawl up on. Put your hand there so it goes up on. Yeah, there. Now. Put any pressure on them. Because they won't bother you, they'll bother that you lean on them and they bite back. Big ant. Big monster. Okay, so that means out of many thousands of men, one may even try for liberation. Of those who are liberated, hardly anybody knows Krishna. But the point is those who know Krishna, they are liberated. So then the direct method is don't bother for liberation, bother for knowing Krishna. Liberation comes as a side dish. You order the chips, you will get the ketchup. You don't have to worry. You don't just endeavor for ketchup. So what are you going to do with it once you get it? Bhagavad Gita 7:19. The Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. So it means that, a long time, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Right? So someone who actually is cultivating knowledge about the Supreme Lord, he'll surrender to the Supreme Lord. That person is rare. So that's special. Okay, now then Srila Prabhupada then says in the purport to Mantra 11, then explains how to defeat these illusions, the Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. The process by which one goes back to Godhead is a different branch of knowledge, and it has to be learned from revealed Vedic scriptures such as the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. To become happy in this life, and obtain a permanent blissful life after leaving this material body, one must study this sacred literature and obtain transcendental knowledge. The conditioned living being has forgotten his eternal relationship with God and has mistakenly accepted the temporary place of his birth as all in all. The Lord has kindly delivered the above-mentioned scriptures in India and other scriptures in other countries to remind the forgetful human being that his home is not here in the material world. The living being is a spiritual entity, and he can be happy only by returning to his spiritual home. Right? So in other words, when one has this knowledge about the Lord, that means one detaches from the material world, because you're connected to the Supreme Lord, and attaches oneself to the spiritual world. Right? Living entity will be attached. The problem is attachment now means material attachment. But if someone has spiritual attachment, that's fine. That's what we're looking for. But to do that, one must have knowledge. So that then here is given as the Vedic literature. These literatures give the actual knowledge by which one can come to that platform. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. Now, Sutra 29. The process is the same. It's just a matter of maybe the field is different.
You were mentioning once that the female intelligence is always influenced by mind, whereas the male intelligence can't be 100%
intelligence. But what does cleverness mean?
Cleverness?
Cleverness means using the intelligence to get a practical thing done. Right? That one is intelligent means that you can analyze things. You know what I'm saying? But cleverness means you can get something done. Okay? So that means intelligence is used. It's just, in other words, it's only used in an area that the mind has interest in. Does that make sense? Well, a man can theorize on something that he may not even have that much interest in. Like he can sit around and be the world's expert on, Egyptology. But he himself is not going to live like an Egyptian, doesn't have any of their values. It's just an interesting topic to theorize on. You know what I'm saying? A woman generally wouldn't do that because what are you going to do with it? Right? You can't wear it, you can't eat it. You can't, what do you do with it? So it's not actually practical. So they'll work with something. So if knowing Krishna and developing one's love for Krishna is seen as practical, then the woman will use her intelligence to get it. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you're working on more the principle of engaging in Krishna's service, rather than the principle of engaging, performing the duty from the platform of detachment. You know what I'm saying? So that's a more intellectual approach. But the same thing is being said if we say, perform your duties for Krishna's pleasure. You know, understand? In other words, the man can work on the thing of, I'm not attached to this, but I'm not attached to that. But the woman is, I'm attached to this, and if I'm not going to be attached to this, I got to be attached to something else. So therefore, I'm attached to Krishna. You understand? So, but the mechanics of it are the same. It's just his presentation in that will be different. Like we see, is what Kunti is saying is exactly the same as what the Upanishad is saying. Right? Kunti is saying, I wish that those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Right? A faithful man is absorbed in transcendental knowledge and subdues the senses, quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. Right? Or if a person knows the true nature of the soul and he thinks, I am spirit, then what will he desire of this material world? How will he become attached to this material body? You understand? So one is being intellectually presented, the one is being presented through relationship. Does that make sense? It's the same thing. So therefore, if these two are done in their own way, then the results are the same, but the approach is different. So if the women use their natural method, then it works very nicely for them. If they try to use the man's method, it doesn't seem to work so good. Right? And the men, if they use the women's method, they have a tendency to become distracted. In other words, both to get distracted if they use the other's method. It's technically the same method, it's just how you describe it. The men describe it from the analytical, the women describe it from the relationship. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But it's the same thing. It's a weakness if there's no, if one is not connecting to Krishna. Right? Because the analyzation of it will always be in relationship to one's own controlling and enjoying. Right? Controlling and enjoying. In other words, if you're not getting some benefits from it, why would you even think about it? Why would you make any endeavor? Well, men can sometimes go off thinking about all kinds of things that, you know, it's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So, women will discuss scenarios that may not be real, but from discussing them, they get the experience of being in that situation. So, since the purpose is to get experience, they get it. You know? For the man, they can discuss these things, and they may be laughing about them, just because the situations are very unique, and it's just, intellectually stimulating, you can come up with so many varieties of different intellectual things. But it doesn't actually give them the experience of what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the women won't find anything interesting in that. Right? And for the men, then it doesn't have, they don't see the analytical aspect of it. Like Kunti's prayer there will not necessarily be seen as, you know, the Vedanta, or knowledge of Upanishads. It just says, we will generally take it as that, don't become worried about the difficult situation you're in, because Kunti was having difficult situations. She's praying for it to come again and again, so it's not the difficult situation that's the problem. You understand? It's being used in a completely different way. But actually, means that also is there, but in relationship to here, it means that by the calamities there, we're able to think of you. By thinking of you, we're becoming free from material contamination. The Upanishad is saying, by having knowledge of the Supreme Lord and the soul, that will free you from material contamination. Right? Does that make sense? So one is the analytical, the other is just connecting yourself to Krishna. But it's saying the same thing. So the one is used as generally surrender means don't become disturbed at the situation, when actually she's meaning be absorbed in Krishna. Right? It's not she's saying don't, it means, you know, the important thing is not being disturbed in the situation you're in. Her point is, it's important to be absorbed in Krishna. But we'll generally use it with, you know, in our discussions with devotees, as don't be disturbed by the situation you're in. But what's the point of that? Right? We're not stoics. Right? A stoic means he is not disturbed by anything. And that's their philosophy. Right? Is that how you say it?
What?
Stoic.
Stoic.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So they're not bothered. But we're not trying to become stoics. Right? We're trying to become devotees. Devotees are stoics. Because of thinking of Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna was not absorbed in the material world. It comes on the side. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You get the car, you get the electric window. The point of getting the car is not to have electric windows. The point of the car is to be able to drive from point A to point B. Then if you have electric windows, then nice. You know what I'm saying? So these whole things of becoming detached from the material world, this, that, that's not the point. The point is to become attached to Krishna. So that's done by having proper knowledge of it. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the focus, because we focus more on getting out of the material world, but we should be focusing more on connecting ourselves to Krishna. Right? If you're connected to the spiritual world, you're not in the material world. Right? But if you're connected to the material world, then it's hard to give up that connection, because the soul is dependent. Right? So the soul has to be connected to something. But if you're connected to the spiritual world, why do you need the connection to the material world? Right? You have somebody who gives you $10, right? And other than that, you have nothing. So that it's going to be very hard to give up $10. You connect yourself to someone who has $1,000, right? You don't need the $10. Do you understand? So it's a different approach. So we have to see where that approach lies. Therefore, in here, being connected with these verses, then we understand here is Kunti's pointing out the point of being connected to the Lord, you're freed from material contamination. Right? Rather than we won't be disturbed. Right? We won't be disturbed at the beginning. Someone who's in distress, then you can see here, Kunti, they had so much distress, they were connected to the Lord, so it didn't bother them. So that will start the process. So therefore, the person who is distressed, or the desire of wealth, or inquisitive, right, will take up the process, because they see, oh, here, someone did like that. But as you go, then you start to see, well, actually, the important thing is that connection to Krishna. That's more important. Right? Because a bridge, you know, you say something's a bridge, but you have to remember the bridge starts on this side, on the material side, and bridges to the spiritual world. So it has to be able to relate to your material situation. So if someone starts to talk about where the bridge touches the ground in the material world and says, oh, that's Maya, then how are you going to get on that bridge? There's no connection. If the bridge is halfway out into the water and it's not touching the shore, how do you get on it? No, but unless you're fully surrendered, then it's all Maya. But the point is you can't get on at that point. You have to get on at the point, I'm attached to the material world, but I want to stop being attached to the material world, so I connect to the Supreme Lord. But I'm still attached, so that's the bridge on this side. Then you go across that bridge, it becomes more and more connected to Krishna, because Krishna is the other side. And the best part, Krishna is the bridge also. So therefore, that knowledge is not Maya, because it's Krishna. Right? It's the Veda is Krishna. Is that okay? Sutra 29. The material senses can perceive the material world, but they cannot perceive the spiritual world. in the same way that that world is beyond their ability to know. Or cannot perceive the spiritual world in the same way. For that world is beyond their ability to know. Very important is that one cannot perceive the spiritual world through the material senses. Right? Only when the material senses are in touch with spirit, then they become spiritual eyes. Then they can see. Right? That's why just by one's own mundane intelligence, that doesn't make it. Kapila Muni is making the point that devotional service in the mode of ignorance is where one considers that your previous material qualifications are what make you qualified in devotional service. Someone with that mentality, they're performing devotional service tinged by the mode of ignorance. You know, they're an academic, so they think I'm very intelligent, I'm smarter than anybody, therefore I'm more advanced. Or I was more materially qualified, therefore I'm more advanced. Like that. Because you can't perceive the Lord with those qualifications. They have nothing to do with that. Right? You know, just as the example given of the intellectual and the boatman. So his knowledge about so many things in the universe that doesn't have any bearing on his ability to swim, which is actually what's going to save him. So the material knowledge has nothing to do with devotional service. It can be engaged in devotional service, but it itself does not make devotional service. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Here someone may protest. Do not the scriptures say, Vaikuntham tad adishtanam drashtum me murtayo gata. Many sages have gone to see the spiritual world. Many devarshis, brahmarshis, and other great souls have gone to the spiritual world, seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and returned to this world to describe what they have seen. Why have you spoken these mistaken words that will bewilder all who hear them? Right? They say it with such confidence, don't they? Like that. Why would you say all that? It would bewilder the common man. To refute this protest, the author begins this passage beginning with Sutra 29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and His spiritual world cannot be perceived by the material senses in the same way the material world is perceived by them. This is so because the spiritual world is beyond the knowledge of the material senses. Adhoksaja. That is the meaning. The idea that the spiritual world can be seen by material senses is an idea created by the illusory energy of the Lord. In truth, the spiritual world is beyond the perception of material senses. So here we have even more. The fun is that not only is it that the material senses can't see the spiritual world, Maya creates the illusion that you can. So this idea that with my material intelligence, my material senses, I can work it all out, that then is actually a product of mine. It's actually her illusion. Right? In the scriptures it is said, quote, the spiritual world of Vaikuntha is worshipped by all the world. No one returns from the spiritual world. This is described in Bhagavad Gita 15.6, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, one who reaches my abode never returns to this material world. In Bhagavad Gita 8.16, the Supreme Personality of Godhead again says, one who obtains my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Right? One may be complaining that, but it says the sages went there and came back. But the point being made here is they went there, they never came back. Means they may be here that you can see them, but they're not here. They're there. You know what I'm saying? Do we say, you know, Lord Chaitanya's associates are in the material world, or they're in the spiritual world? Even if they're walking in the material world, they're still in the spiritual world. Right? So actually, they never come here again. So that thing, you go there with the material senses and come back and explain it, but it doesn't happen. They get there through the spiritual senses, and they come back and through those same senses explain it to you. Right? Because the senses work on the same mechanics. Does that make sense? I use the pot to cook halibut for Krishna, and I use the pot to cook halibut not for Krishna. Is the process different? No, it's the same process. So therefore you can explain it. But the one is being done with devotion, so it's a different perspective, and the other one's not. So then they never have that material perspective. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4.1, it is said, the descriptive power of speech fails in the realm of the absolute truth. It is also said, the spiritual world is made of pure goodness. There every desire is at once fulfilled. It is also said, the spiritual world of Vaikuntha is worshipped by all the worlds. In the Narada Pancharatra, Lord Sadashiva explains, the eternal spiritual world of Goloka is situated in the spiritual sky. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.9.11, the following description of Brahma's vision of Vaikuntha is given. The personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode. Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and free of all illusory existence. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no predominance of the influence of time, so as to speak of the illusory external energy. It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and demons worship the Lord as devotees. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is of yellowish color. And their bodily features are very attractive. They are just the age of growing youth. They all have four hands, and they are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. So it's showing that it's beyond here. Right? So this is his vision of Vaikuntha, but that's given because the Lord was satisfied, so he revealed. Right? So in other words, the chit potency is what is the working principle here. Okay, it keeps going. So it continues then on Thursday. Yeah. So hopefully we can get through, depending on whether it gets through this question.